All right, let's start it again from the top of Ayin Beis over there. Well, you asked the question, Amai lo nitan hishovein? Right? They said, why can't the guy give back, you know, the article that he stole? So he says, De'eni b'teres hishovein, because he's not included in the law which says that you have to give back. It's as simple as that, right? Law. Right.
David's shaking his head.
So
it's not fair.
I understand why they're doing
it. Right. So they say, if that's the case, he says, how about what then follows on the rest of the statement, which says, Bo chavero v'netola mimenu ne'ragoleho. In other words, if another guy comes along and steals from the first guy who stole, right? He too is to be put to death. He's also guilty, right, of stealing, even though he's not stealing from a Jew. This time he's stealing from a guy, right? Right? So if that's the case, they say, Mishnah boy says, okay, Reisha Mishun Tzeri Yisrael. Okay, the first guy, I can understand, you said that he's put to death for what reason? Because he gave service to a Jew, right? Elo Sefer. But the next part of the statement, which says a guy who steals from a guy, my of it, what did he do? He never had anything to do with the Jew. Do you understand? Right. So why should he be put to death? You can see, I mean, that they're not very comfortable with the idea over there, okay? El Shema Binah, right, so what are we learning from this whole God Sabbath over here? That Mashiach B'yevet Kechavim Kaina, that a guy does acquire possession through taking hold of it, okay? Shema Binah, that proves it, right? So, okay, so far so good. Sounds like we've solved one problem. Yeah, so we'll have a couple of more. Hahu gavro double achavre. All right. So now they're talking about a person who said to another person. Okay. And now, incidentally, we're not talking necessarily about a guy at all. We're talking about a Jew in this particular case. Okay. All right. Mr. A said to Mr. B, okay, he is abdidina law, laha ara, laha means with a little law. He says, if I decide to sell this land, then I'll sell it to you. And then what happened? Ozal, he went, and Zabda the Inish Achrida, he went and he sold it to a different person. Okay. So Amar Rav Yosef, so obviously, you know, the first guy comes to the Beis Din, right? Mm-hmm. And he wants justice, he says. So Rav Yosef says, Kona Kama. Yeah, the first one is the one who really should get possession of the field, right? So Amar Abaye. So Abaye said to him, V'hol le posak. But he never established a price. All he said is, if I decide to sell, I'll sell you. Okay. But did he tell him how much of a price he wanted or anything like that? He never told him that. Okay. Because was he decided in his own mind that he wanted to sell the field? He only said, if I should sell. Right. You understand the language over here.
Yeah, he did an if. But that represents... kind of a commitment to...
Well, this is the question. Is it a commitment or not in this particular case? So Rav Yosef says, since he sold the field, he should sell it to the first person, not to the second person. That's what Rav Yosef is saying, okay? Kodakama. And as a matter of fact, you see that little base over there, which means that according to Maimonides, this is the ruling, okay? Nevertheless, we'll see that even though this is the ruling, But there are those who say that what? That's the second guy who owns the field.
Not a real contract.
Right.
This is very common. I mean,
yeah.
This kind of situation is, they teach this in every law school. I remember studying this in Israel parks in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
This is like your bread and butter question. It's interesting to see how both solve it.
Right. Okay, so Amalei Abaye said to him, right, Amalei Posak, right? After all, he never set a price for him. So now they ask, your argument is that if he didn't set a price, then he did not acquire it, right? Dit down, as we've learned, okay? Remember, coming back again to what we had earlier. If you sell wine, of course I'm talking to a goy, I mean a Jew, sells wine, right, to a goy. Posak, actually, modad, right? So if he told him the price before he measured out, then what did we say? We said, Domov, Butorin, right, that the money that he gets from the selling is permitted to him. Whereas, modad, actually, posak, but if he measured out the wine before establishing a price for it, then in that case the money that he gets is prohibited, right? So by Havalai, so how are you going to square that with the previous statement? So it says, Kidravirin, it says, as we've said, Dilmo Humudiyai Nesach Shani. Maybe the difference is that with Yai Nesach, it's much more severe. And so, in other words, we're stricter with Yad Nesach than we would be with some other area. Okay, I see my throat is going. So
he's trying to say that perhaps this isn't
right.
Generality because of the fact of wine being involved.
Right, exactly.
Wine has specific rulings.
Yad Nesach is...
You're
right, it's a stricter category than the sale of the field. In other words, we might presume that in the case of the sale of the field, maybe Rav Yossi's opinion is not upheld. So we'll take a look and we'll see over here. All right. So they say, let's see, a bit of a all right, so Toshma says, listen, he says, the Omar of Idi Bar Ovid, said, Uvdo Hava Be Rav Chisto, a certain event, a certain incident took place in the school of Rav Chisto. In other words, you know, somebody came with a case to Rav Chisto and his school. For Rav Chisto Be Rav Huda. And Rav Chisto decided he better have a consultation with another authority. So where did he go to? He went to the school of Rav Huda. Okay. Ufashte Mehor. And they reasoned it out from the following. Ditnan, as we have learned, it says, Moshach Amorov Ufu'alov, the son of Sofeso, Bain posak achelo modad uve modad achelo posak leikodon. Now here is the situation that they cite. Okay. A Jew, okay, you have somebody who has, let's say, has wheat to sell, okay? He's selling something. He has wheat to sell. The person who wants to buy says, I want the people who carry the loads. Today we would say the trucker, right? But in those days they didn't have trucks. So instead, what did they have? They had donkey drivers and workers, you know, who carry things on their back, okay? So they come in, the echdisa the soch peso, and he brings him into his house, right? So, bein posak ad shelo bodat, veimodat ad shelo posak, lo kana. Says over here that whether he established a price with the seller, okay, before measuring out how much quantity he wanted, or whether he measured out the quantity and then he asked to, you know, he tried to establish a price, in any case he did not acquire it yet. And both parties have the right to retract. In other words, whoever says, okay, whether it's the buyer or the seller, you know, he says that, let's say, the seller says, I want $100 for the load, okay? And the buyer says, no, I only want to pay you 80, okay? So either of the two parties has the right to do what? To retract, right. Let's say it's no deal.
Are they arguing about the cost of hiring the donkeys and the workers, or about the wheat or whatever?
No, what is measured out.
What is measured out?
Because that's what they're saying, right, measured out. But the question is, has the, you know, the person who wants to buy it, has he actually acquired it by virtue of the fact that he had them bring it in into his house? Because here is another principle, and that is the principle that how do I establish possession of something? So we learned different things. One of them we learned is Meshicha, you know, you take it up, you schlep it to yourself, you raise it up, something or other, I mean, right? But another way is that you acquire literally through your chotzer. In other words, your own courtyard. Once it comes into your physical premises, then in that case, this is also acquisition. So the question is over here. They brought it into the house, right? Did that mean that he automatically acquired it at this particular point? Or was the deal not consummated because they didn't come to an agreement and they could disagree? This is the question. Do you understand?
Yeah, according to this, it says that he didn't acquire possession.
So that's right. That's what they're saying.
Really,
right, right. Here they're saying that he did not. That's why I say they're arguing this point back and forth.
Is,
right.
The fact is,
right.
What I don't understand is he hasn't given a consideration for it yet. He hasn't paid for it.
Right.
It's come into his premises.
Yeah.
But he has really, that's the physical part of it, but he hasn't given the consideration for it. So how could he own it?
Right. So he doesn't own it yet. That's the point of making. Even, and what's even more, is here, it's already been unloaded. A certain amount has been unloaded, right?
Wait. That's a really good point. But look,
right.
Here's what it says. It says,
yeah,
it doesn't matter whether they determined the price or they didn't determine the price.
Right.
Okay. Now take the first example. If they determined the price, then that's a contract.
Right.
Okay,
correct.
He would own it.
That is correct.
All right?
That's, yes,
because they have a contract. All right?
Yeah, under those circumstances, you're right. Right.
Okay, so...
Yeah.
I just don't understand this rule. You have a good point, but this is really... So how does this work out?
The point is here, there is no contract.
Right.
And there is no consideration. They were talking, maybe it's going to be this much money.
No, but that's not what they're talking about now. That's a different,
yeah,
that was a different one.
Isn't this the one that's in the house?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to
pay. Oh, right, okay. Now...
They disagree with the price.
So far, I have to tell you, the way the Gemara runs over here, they have not unloaded it in the house. They have not unloaded. Okay.
In the courtyard, then.
All right.
It's
okay,
still in the courtyard?
So it's in the house.
Yes.
It's in the house, but they have not unloaded it. They're arguing over the price. And since they're arguing over the price, then we say that the deal has not been consummated, each of them has the right to retract, right?
No, but that's not what it says. It says, Pasak al had shlo madad, abe madad ad shlo pasak.
Right.
Both circumstances, and they're saying, Shnechem lo kana, Shnechem yochim laksur. So they're saying, again, I'm repeating myself, that it doesn't matter. If they determine the price, it's still not a valid acquisition. Whether they determine the price or they didn't determine the price, it's still not a valid acquisition.
Okay.
That's what it says.
All right. Okay.
Because of what you just said.
But I also said, even though it's already in the guy's house,
he didn't take real action.
But it did not still, he did not, he was not quite, he didn't acquire possession of it simply by virtue of the fact that it's in his house. However, then the next part of the sentence says, Perkon, if on the other hand they unloaded first, right, the Ichnisa the Sof Beisel, and then they brought it into his house, unlike the previous one where apparently they didn't unload yet, okay? All right, they unloaded and brought it into the house. Posok actually modad, right? And he made a price, right? Before even measuring it out. Then they are not allowed to retract. They have to go ahead. Okay? Because they gave a price, right? Even though they didn't measure it out yet, right? But modad, if they measured, right, Achila Posak, they measured out, but still the price had not been determined, right? Then what? Then Shteim Nichol Lachsobehen, right? They can still retract.
Wait, how can they measure out without unloading it? Good question, huh? How can they measure it out? How can they do, you call them dog,
Right.
How do they do this?
If they unload and bring it into the house and they establish a price, then they can't go back on it. That's what he's saying. Whereas if they bring it in, right, and the price has not been established, then as long as the price has not been established, he says that either party can retract. It's
you talk about unloading, visualizing that they have these boxes of some sort.
Right.
And they're bringing in.
All right. We'll say they're carrying in baskets or something, right?
Right. And so the box. So it's not unloaded.
Right.
The stuff is there, but they haven't taken the stuff. They haven't unloaded the box for him to put into his
Correct. Yeah, in those days they use great big baskets or something like that. Okay. Right.
So, so they're bringing in. They came with a horse and carriage or with the ass.
Right.
They're in the courtyard.
Yeah.
But now they've got these baskets that they carried into the house.
Wouldn't the seller know in advance how much he put on the donkey?
The seller knows,
right? There's no question about it.
Decided that it isn't worth 100 prutas.
Right.
He wants to give 80.
Right.
It's put in the door.
Okay.
It's already here.
Okay. So now that we know the problem, let's think about it. To be continued next week. Well, next week, as I said, I may have to cancel. If I do have to cancel, I'll let you know. Okay. Yeah. Next week, I may have to cancel for personal reasons. We are continuing tonight, which is the 26th of December in 2007. In the middle of Avodah Zorah, Daf Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, and continue with the question about Kenyan, about a contract. Okay, so we have the following case. By the way, the place where we are right now is on the second long line.
Second long line.
Second long line. beginning with the word Sahu Gavra. Do you see it? In the middle of the line. Okay. All right. Hahu Gavra, there was a certain man, the Omale Lechavre, who said, you know, to the other guy, he said, "E Mizbenina Lo, the Ha'ara Mizbenina Lo B'me'ezuze." He says, if I decide to sell this land of mine, then I'll sell it to you for 100 zuzim. Okay. Ozal Zabda Linishachina. And then he went ahead and he sold it to another guy, Bimei of Yesmin, for 120 zuzim. Okay. So, naturally, the question is this a breach of contract or not? You understand? That's the question. So Omar Rav Kana says, Kana Kama. The first man actually is the one who has bought it. The fact that the second guy offered more money, but that doesn't count since he promised it to the first guy, right? So Maskiflo Rav Yaakov in the Harpikot. So Rav Yaakov, it came from...
He's the one he promised it to originally, right?
Right. No, I'm not talking about a house. I'm talking about a field. Ara. Ara is land. Okay? A field. He owns a field. He's a farmer. Has a field. Okay? And he said to this guy that if I were to sell it, I'll sell it to you for 100 zuz. Along comes another man who buys it from him for 120 zuz. So the question is this a breach of contract or not? Okay? It's as simple as that.
Yeah, but the notes say that they made a kinyan when he specified the price and said he would sort of sell it to him if he ever made it.
He made a kinyan, that's a different story.
Well,
he did not make a kinyan. Doesn't say over here that he made a kinyan.
Did they consummate the deal with a valid kinyan? Note 22.
I don't see the valid kinyan mentioned over here.
No, okay.
Do you?
Well,
it stands to reason. Earth stands to reason. If he had made a kinyan for the field, then in that particular case, he could not retract. Okay? Of course, the question is, how would he make a kinyan? Not just by offering a price, but also he would have to do something else. You have to actually go out into the field, dig a hole, cut some grass, I mean, do something, an action that indicates the fact that you are now the possessor of that field. You understand?
Okay.
That's how a field is acquired. That's the way they worked in those days. Okay. So it doesn't mention over here that there was any kinyan. Well, for me it doesn't make any sense because, as I say, if there is a valid kinyan, then in that case you don't break the contract. Okay? I mean, what would be the purpose of a kinyan if you could break it at will, do you understand? If it's a valid kinyan, then it has to have substance in it.
Well,
you can't
stop it going. You don't possess yet.
That's a good question. Can you make a kinyan, as they say, al domish lebolo elam, something that hasn't yet even come into the world?
Right.
Two differences. You know, there is a difference of opinion about that. The prevailing view is that no. But there is a minority view that says you can. It's all like betting on futures, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
right.
That's what this is, a future sale.
Exactly. So at any rate, as we see...
You want some water?
Not yet. Thank you. And we see that Rav Kana says Kana Kama, right? He says the first man actually is the one who acquired the field. But along comes Rav Yaakov in the Harpeth Code, right, who challenges this patrician, And he says, no, it's the second one. Okay? Why is it the second one? In other words, the one to whom he sold it for 120 zuz. Why is he the valid person? So the explanation is as follows. Okay. He says, right? And he says, "Hi Zuze Anisuhu." He says as follows. Literally, what it means is that these extra Zuzim that he offered compelled the guy to do it.
You mean so over 100 Zuz?
Right. So Rashi explains as follows. He says, when the first guy approached him, he was actively engaged in farming. He did not have in mind to actually sell the field. What he had in mind simply is to continue farming. And therefore he told him, okay, if someday I decide to do it, okay. But there was no kinyan or anything like that that was established. Even though it says over here, you know, according to Rav Kana, that the Kodakama, right? But that's because on the basis of an oral promise, so to speak, okay? However, was the oral promise given really just to make the other guy feel happy? Or was it, you know, really because he wanted to sell it to him? Since he didn't want to sell it to him, so therefore there was no validity in the promise. Whereas when the second guy came along, and he saw an opportunity to make a profit, so he decided, hey, may as well sell it and get a good price for it. Like, for example, a farmer locally who decides, you know, to sell it to a real estate developer. It's the same thing. They give up farming because it doesn't pay as much as selling the land to somebody else. Okay? So it's a parallel situation. So that's what he says. This is what Rabbi Yaakov ben Harpikot says. And it says, Behilchasor, ke Rabbi Yaakov ben Harpikot, and the halacha taka follows what Rabbi Yaakov said over here. So that unless, you know, there's real substance in the sale, it's meant really because you want to sell it, and so on and so forth, and then in that particular case, there's no validity yet in that until finally the final clinching action takes place. Now we have another miser over here. Omalai, if a man said to the other guy, Kiddushai may be tlosa, he says, I don't know in my own mind what price I want for whatever it is that I'm selling you. Okay? Let's say... I don't have a definite price in mind. But he says, Kiddushai may tlosa. But we'll call three people together and have them assess it, okay? And according to their assessment, we'll proceed on that basis, okay? Now, naturally, what do the three people immediately suggest to you? Suggest the best thing. So, in other words, there's a certain amount of validity. I have to tell you that not every case will require, as we would say, mumchim, you know, people who are experts in Jewish law, but for certain things, you could simply call people who have some business experience or whatever practical experience. And they could also serve sort of as an ad hoc best. Okay? Now, you know what I mean by ad hoc. For the moment. Okay, right. Yeah, okay.
An ad hoc committee.
Right, an ad hoc committee. So an ad hoc business. Okay. So, now the Gemara continues. It says, Okay. Then it says that afilu trei migot losam. Then in that particular case, if you say, as it will be evaluated by three people, then even if only two of the three are in agreement, then that holds. Why?
Majority
rules, exactly. With a bezdin, it's the majority that rules, okay? And so on. What is it based on, by the way? It's a posik. It's a posik in the Torah. It says, Acharei Rabim Lehatos. In other words, you make a decision according to the majority, okay? Of course, it doesn't hold true in every case. As we'll see, here's an exception that's going to be mentioned right now. Okay. Now, I feel it's a good lesson. Well, if he says, Kida Amre Bitloso, if they say that three people must decide upon it, then Ada Amre Bitloso, okay? That in that particular case, all three have to be in agreement. So you have to watch the language over here. That's a nice little language, right?
Yeah.
Okay. First one simply says, you know, as assessed by three people. And this one says, three people have to assess it. Okay. So that's the difference, right? Now they say, Ada Amre Bitlosov. That Kiddushai may be Arbor. What if they say four people have to evaluate it? Then Ad the Amre be Arbor, right? So even if that's what the way they said, but nevertheless the four people have to be in agreement. The Koshekein Hecha. And certainly if you use the expression as four people themselves rule, okay, the first one says before a group of four, and the other one says four people have to make the decision, okay, so certainly but in any case, what is the decision over here in this particular case? So the answer is all four have to be in agreement. Why do they have to be in agreement? They have to be in agreement because the stress in this case is this an ordinary bezdin? The answer is no. Bezdin, is this an ordinary bezdin? We said before that the three, even if it was like an ad hoc bezdin, but still it's functioning like a bezdin.
Right.
And in the bezdin, you have to have a majority. When you have four, can you have a majority?
No.
No.
You have two and two.
Right. So, I know, you can figure three and one, but even so, it doesn't work in this particular case because presumably, the language implied that if you're not going according to the ordinary evaluation of asking three people to assess, why do you insist upon four? Because obviously you want four. You understand? So this is the reason. And four, definitely, it's considered that you can't really have a majority because of the possibility of, you know, two versus two.
You know,
yeah.
I'm sorry to interject, this is a little off the subject, but it's interesting how Jewish astuteness is drawn from the Talmud. If you want to read the thing about the three, you could say if you have three people, okay, they can make a decision, so a majority will. But if you have the three people, if you want to read it that way, then it has to be unanimous.
Right.
What does that read in line? You up after the 67 war, the United Nations resolution,
right.
Rabbi Eben and the Israeli government, as
242,
said it's not from the territories we're going to withdraw, leaving it to be open-ended.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's interesting, I mean, but it's it kind of like you can see that there's some sort of like there's a Talmudic foreshadowing for that kind of
right.
reasoning.
Yeah, clear. Yeah. That's true. Right, yeah, right. Right. Okay. All right. Same place. Okay. That's the sidebar.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Now, the Amale, so Amale, if the man says to the other guy, okay, get a shot, maybe it's Lassa. Okay, let's get together three guys who will assess it, all right? They also Talasa Vishamuha, and three guys came along, and they evaluated. They decided, you know, what should be the price. The Amale Idach, but then the second guy said, Nesut Lasach Midin. Let's get three other guys, he says.
I don't like those.
The Kimlahut Fay, right? Because maybe they'll be greater experts than these people. Yeah, so Amar Papa. So Rabbi said, Dinahu Dima'akev. According to Rabbi, that means you have to stop the business at this particular point because you don't know which group of three to follow, right? Maskul Rav Huda Berei the Rav Yeshua. But Rav Huda, the son of Rav Yeshua, disagrees with what Papa had to say over here. He says, "B'mai the Adi Kim Lehutfei, how do you know that the second group are really more expert than the first group? Dilma Hani Kim Lehutfei, maybe the first group are more expert than the second group. So Vehilchaso Kerav Hudan Berei Rav Shua. So therefore, the halacha follows Rav Hudan, the son of Rav Shua, and of course, in whose favor does he rule? The first person." Because he says, how do you know that, you know, the second more expert? Now, you have to rely, basically because a psak, so you have to rely upon the psak.
So in other words, you don't constitute a second bait in, or a second set of
right.
But you only have one.
So that's exactly it. And you have to be willing to accept the authority of judgment. I might add that in all probability, they didn't simply select, let's say, any three guys who came along in the street. More likely, it followed the general rules that you find in Gemara and Sanhedrin, which has a chapter beginning with the words Zeborer. This one chooses and the other one chooses. One chooses a judge that he wants, the other party chooses a judge that he wants, and then the two judges themselves choose a third one, who presumably is impartial and who listen to it. Yeah. Yeah. But this is what we call Zeborer, you know. Borer. Borer. Choose. Choose. Right. Right. Yeah. Right.
Aim
Brera. Right. Aim Brera is right. They don't have a choice. Exactly. Notal. Okay, so we have a new Mishnah now. Notal is a mashpech. Umadal b'sof tzolach yisov. Shel. Oyveit kechavim. Okay. Back again to good old Yain Nesach. Okay? Back again. Okay. Hey.
One of these days I'll run out of wine.
Doctor, I want to ask you this.
Yeah.
The halacha is according to Rav Huna.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I'm a little confused. We spend all this.
I don't understand it. That could go on continuously. This one could say, I don't like this 33.
Yeah, of course. Obviously. That's why the first one, according to Rav Huda, that's it.
That's the one.
That's it. You don't go on the basis of trying to get another one. Right. Yeah.
All right.
right, right. Correct, correct.
I know, I'm so worried about that. If there isn't any proof that it's done for a libation, why are we worried that the Gentile is drinking the
Okay. I would say that in general, go back to a couple of basic things. Number one, that the rabbis had a tendency to be more machmir in this because it has to deal with Avodah Zorah. And they were so afraid of the effects of Avodah Zorah, and Jews should not be enticed into it, that they are more machmir in this area than they are in others. I mean, we see that already. And secondly, as we discussed a few weeks ago, one of the major reasons why is really in order to make sure that Jews would not become so attracted to a goyish way of life that you know they would practice intermarriage. Look, I mean, we see the effects today. I mean, what's happening? Because we're living in a society where we're so immersed in a culture, you know, which is what you know the modern American culture is, that the intermarriage has certainly increased among young people.
But yeah. Something, I mean, we use it so many different ways.
Yes.
Different special ways, for example, in the wedding.
Right.
And the seder.
Right.
And the kiddush.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, the wine is more than just. Just
another drink. Yeah, I mean, it's not table drink. No, I mean, that's the idea. With us, I mean, something which has to deal with sanctification. That's correct.
So if the Gentile drinks, right. They were afraid that it will make a trade. In other sense, for the, yeah.
But because they use wine in their service, I mean, they use it. They poured libations.
Right.
That was part of the year. Right. Right. Right.
So all of these.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, well, that's a theory. I mean, as to why, for example,
we use it for happy.
In Mediterranean countries, you know, they go in for wine.
Happy.
Right.
They use it for something else. It's
right.
Something.
Obviously, drunkenness is also something that's not quite in keeping with Jewish idealism.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, Shikos Agoy, I know. You know what a shank is? A saloon. The Jews used to. Yeah.
An inn?
An inn, right. But the inn where they sold liquor, that was a shank, okay? Dichter is the yid, you know, dichter sober, right? Dichter is the yid, dichter is the yid, dichter is the davdin visor, my love is a yid, dichter is the davdin visor, my love is a yid. I haven't sung that many years.
Well, I think
it
comes out of their experience.
Of course it does, absolutely. I mean, it's a Jewish folk song, for the way. Exactly, yeah. All right, so to get back to our Mishnah right now. Okay, yes, the new Mishnah. So as I said, it's going to deal again with Yayin Nesek, but this time the principle that's involved over here is, the question is, streams. Does a steady stream serve as a connection between one thing and another? We've had references to this several weeks ago. But here's the official text in the Mishnah itself. Okay? So it says, Notal es habashpech. Man takes a funnel. Okay? Modad l'serch tzrechosi shadei kochem. And he puts, you know, the bottom of the funnel into a vessel that belongs to a jar, whatever you want, that belongs to an Oyret Kerchavim, right? The Chozar, and then he went, and he then used the funnel and poured wine into a vessel belonging to a Jew. All right, in other words, let's say he had a barrel of wine, okay? So he takes a funnel and he pours it. It's kosher wine to begin with, all right. But he pours it into a container that a goy has, and the funnel obviously, you know, is stuck inside over there. And then he goes and he does the same thing to a container that belongs to a Jew. So, okay? Yeah, same funnel. So, im yesh bo akeves yayin osur, then if there's a drop of wine left in the funnel that had previously been, you know, in the Eved Kerchim, am ora mekli el kli. Now, another similar case.
What's the conclusion here?
The conclusion is that if there is a little wine that's still adhering to the funnel, so the wine that he poured into the Jew's container is automatically deemed Yayin Nesach. So the Jew can't use it.
Why?
Because we learned that Yayin Nesach is called Shehu. Even the slightest amount makes it prohibited.
Yeah, but
why? Because of Avodah Zorah, we said, it's called Shehu. Okay, right. Yeah. It's Jewish wine, but because the funnel had first been...
Funnel.
Yes, but it had touched. I mean, there was wine. Look, you pour in, obviously wine is going to rise. Where's the funnel? The funnel is still stuck a little bit inside over there, right? You understand what I'm saying?
No, but I understand what he's saying, though.
Yeah.
He's saying, okay, it's in the Gentile's barrel. But what's
right.
happening?
Right.
It's Jewish wine.
Right.
Jewish wine, remember?
Right,
going
right,
into the
right.
funnel.
Correct.
The Jewish wine remains in the funnel. Now you put it into a barrel.
Yeah, but by virtue of the fact that it was already in the Avodah Zorah barrel, right? So automatically it is now... Become a Avodah Zorah, right? Become Yayin Nesach. Okay.
The final
like
barrel.
It's a secondary.
What's the argument against it?
Well, then wine goes
you
against
know,
the barrel.
That's almost
right.
The side of the barrel.
It's stricter than Shabbat almost. And really, that's a Yad Sheni.
It comes up. Comes up. That's the answer.
It depends
all right.
on the amount. If he has a big barrel, he puts a small amount of wine in.
Yeah. Okay. Did it touch the bottom?
Doesn't touch the bottom.
Okay. But if it touched.
That's a different story.
Okay, so really this is what we're talking
okay.
about.
Okay,
because otherwise, I mean, it wouldn't make any sense. I agree with you. Because we did learn that a guy, you know, could sell to, he could sell kosher wine to a guy also.
Sure.
There's no question about that. But under these circumstances, where the minute that it came into the barrel of the guy, it automatically became Yayin Nesach.
Okay,
so if it touched it, right.
What if he changed the funnel after that and then used it?
If he used a different funnel, the question wouldn't arise.
Okay. Or if he washed it.
Presumably, if he washed it thoroughly or something like that, he might get away with it, right? Yeah.
Right? Like this funnel is for Goyim, and
right.
this funnel
is
for Jews.
Yeah, right. So okay. If you have one for Fleishik and one for Milchik, so you have
yeah.
one for Goyim, one for Yidin, so...
what's the problem? Why is it
okay.
we solve the problem.
We solve the problem. Don't mix. That's the answer. Don't mix. And the aura, the kli el kli. Okay. Not if you. No, you mix it around and you pour it. Okay. From one. Let's say from one container into another container. Okay? Alright, so es se'ira mimenu muto. Then, the kli from which you poured the wine is permissible. The es Sheiro L'Seichai also, but the Kli, of course, we're talking about the second Kli was who's was the Goyis, okay?
Well, didn't say that.
Well, you have to understand, otherwise it would make any sense.
Doesn't say that.
It would make sense otherwise.
So that's why I'm saying.
Of course, you have to understand. I mean, you have to read between the lines.
Can you explain this again? What is happening here? From what vessel to what vessel?
Okay. This case, that's all right. No, that's no problem. A Jew, again, is pouring wine, okay, into the kli of a goy.
Okay.
All right. So,
from what?
The question is, of course, in the pouring process, do we say that it's going to make a connection between one and the other or not? This is going to be the machlokes. Okay, do you understand?
Already was wine that belongs
right,
to the
boy here. Right. So that automatically. Right. So what he's saying over here is that in the original kli, the wine that's there is still okay. That's mutar. Okay? But the kli that the goy has, there it's usur. Okay, because the question is whether the pouring process itself, you know, has something to do with establishing a connection between the upper one, so to speak, and the lower one. The upper one being the Jews, and the lower one being the God. Okay.
Is it the pouring process, or in fact, when you're worried that there's a residue in the boys?
The question here is going to be really. Do we say that there is a connection between the two when you have a stream going down? That's really what the problem is.
And the barrel that's pouring into the other barrel is the Jew's barrel.
Right. Okay. This is the way the Mishnah seems right at this moment. Okay.
You're assuming that the other barrel is a Gentile barrel.
Yes. Yes.
Rashi doesn't clarify that.
Well, Rashi says, okay, we take a look. He says, Hamora Mikleo Kli, right? He quotes the Mishnah as to Shirur Ben Mutay. He says, the Gemara, he says, Gemara is going to explain the Oive Kechovim. What Rashi is saying is now that they're going to reverse the process afterwards. Instead of the Jew pouring into the goy, it's going to be the goy pouring into the Jews.
That's what I think it is.
So in that particular case,
that
already
the
right.
Story.
Yeah, that changes the story because the question is, what is the action of the goy? We had already a reference to it also. Is the goy his own personal koyach involved in it or not? If his koyach is involved in it, then that makes a trick. Okay. So, but that's not the way the Mishnah reads to begin with. I have to tell you, the way the Mishnah begins, you know, the way it reads to begin with, is the way I interpret it.
Right.
Later in the Gemara, you know, they want to turn the tables around or something.
Around,
that's a different story, but that's not what the Mishnah says. Okay. All right, we'll do a little bit more. My voice is beginning to get very dry and cracked and so on. Okay. All right, so Gemara begins. Tanan Hossam. We have learned there. Where is the there? There is in the Mishnah, actually in Taros. Taros is a Mishnah which it's in the last Seder, you know, the Seder Taros that you're familiar with, well, not familiar with, the average person has never studied it. But in Taros, it deals with all kinds of adjurs. What is Tohor and what becomes Tomei? Okay? So, here what they're talking about is right now. Not all is, the Hamashke, the Feach, Eino Chibor. lo l'tumah v'lo l'tara. That's the quotation. All right. Which means that which is poured, okay, that's nitzok. Okay. The hakataferis, Rashi, they explain that that means that's water that rushes from above down a slope. Okay. And a masket tofeach, that means that there's just enough water to moisten, but you know, not a great amount of water. Okay. But at any rate, it says eino chibur, it is not considered a connecting agent, lo l'tumah v'lo l'tara, neither the tumah nor tara. In other words, indecisive. Okay. Then they say ha'ashboran chibur l'tumah l'tara. Now the question is, what is ashboran? Ashboran is in reality a like a body of water. Okay, a body of water. But the question is, a body of water in what? So this we have to take a look at Rashi. So, it says, okay, first of all, all right, let's take a look at Rashi. Because if we don't understand these terms, we're going to have a little difficulty with this whole deal. On Nitzok, he says, what is Nitzok? He says, Kiluach Tzidor, it's like water coming out of a pipe, right? Habo Milmala Lamata Bizkifa. And it comes straight down, okay? Kemarzev Shel Gagan, as for example, he says, the gutter of the roof. How does the water come down? Comes down through the gutter, you know. Now, okay, so that's Nitzok. Okay. Then he explains what's the word Kataferis, or Kataferis, or what? Nobody knows exactly how to pronounce this word. I would say Kata, probably because the Greek Kata means against or down or something like that. So, Mayim Haboyim Ilmala says this is water that comes from above, Lamata, down, Derech Midron, by way of a slope. Midron is a slope. Shel Tel Gavoa Zokov, of a high hill. Okay. Mashke Tefeach, what is that? Which I translated as just a small amount of water, right? Enough to moisten. So he says, the rainbow Tofach Abnasat Beach. It doesn't have enough really in order to make everything wet. Sheim Tofach Behen Biyode Layale Bo Mashka. Sheyuchalat Beach Devarachia. That he says that if you touch just a small amount of water, there isn't enough over there to make anything else wet. Just a small amount. All right. So then the Gemara quotes, as we said, Ashborin chibur l'tumah l'tara. However, an Ashborin is a connecting agent, whether it is for tumah or tara. So here we have to look again at the Rashi. It says, skipping the next one over there because it's explaining, why it's not either the tumah or tara to begin with.
Like
what is the ashborin?
That's from the second line up from the bottom.
Yeah, all right. Oh, it's probably explains. It says, Bikua Eretz Melecho. Says, this is a cracked, salty ground. In other words, an unfertile ground, Chanisbako, which cracked. The Nikvashon Mayim, and water has gathered on it. It says it could be a chibur to tuba or tarak. It could be connection. In other words, depending upon what it touches, either it's going to make it, or rather, let's put it the other way, whatever touches it, either it's going to make it tamei or it's going to make it tarak. That's what he's trying to say. Right. But I have to say that this is only one explanation, because in reality what we're dealing over here is a different problem. We're dealing over here with a question of a mikvah. If you've been to the mikvah that we have locally, you go in and you see the mikvah, okay? And of course, we always make sure that there is at least 40 saw inside there at all times, so that it's a kosher mikvah, okay? Now, that water to begin with had to be, you know, water like rainwater or something, whatever that happened, okay? But there is also an ashboren, which is a second pool of water that you don't see, and it's joined to this, so that there's always going to be a supply of water in the mikveh that'll be
okay,
right. So the ashboren could be filled with something, but the point is that as long as the mikveh itself has at least 40 soah of kosher wine, it's what must protect us to make sure that there's always more water, so they have the ashboren. So, at any rate, what is the whole idea? Ashboren then is the fact that it's supplementing what there is over there, and as long as the mikveh itself is tahor, so it's a mikveh tahor. But if there isn't enough water in it, then what happens? Then the mikveh becomes tummy. Okay? So it's something that has to be taken care of in order to make sure. So, in any case, the water there can either be a source of taro or a source of tuba, depending upon what else touches it and so on. Okay. Yeah. So, the Gemara over here, what it's saying is, okay, granted that when it's poured, right, it could either be it's not a connection, it says Enochipa, right? It's not a connection either for Tomei or for Tahar. Okay, that's fine. So it's not a connection. However, Omar Rav Huna said, Netzok, Fitkaferes, Mashke, Tifeyach, right? All these things that we mentioned before are not a connection, but he says they are chibur, they are a connection, the Inyan Yain Nesach, when it comes to Yain Nesach. Okay. So this is the point that they're going to be discussing right now. But I'll tell you, I'm losing my voice at this point. So we'll have to let it sink in a little bit, and we'll get back to the case. Well, we have arrived at the second day of January in the year 2008, and we'll start right down at the bottom of Ayin Beis Amud Aleph. Okay? Spent a great deal of time with the... trying to give a definition of what these various things are that were mentioned. I mean, the nitzok, the kateferes, the mashke, the feyach, etc., what they were, what the ashboren is, and so on. So we got down to Rav Huna, nitzok, kateferes, the mashke, the feyach, ibul, and yon nesim, yon nesim. Okay. So, the part, okay, I'm just reviewing a little bit right now, okay. So, Rav Nachman, I'll start right now with the, let's see, what is it, 7 lines from the bottom, in the middle of the line. So I want to lay Rav Nachman, the Rav Huna. So Rav Nachman disputed this business of Rav Huna. And he says, Men Oloch, how did you arrive at your decision? If you say it is because of the Mishnah that we just quoted before, that Hanitzok Varkataferes, Vashotefeach, Eino Chibur, Lo Letumim Velo Tara, you know, that whether the water comes straight down, whether it comes on a slant, whether it's a just a small pool of water, there's not a connection either for Tumor or for Tara. So he says, all right, God's fine. The Tumor, the Tara, who the Lohavi Chibur. All right. So, granted, that the Tumor and Tara, in other words, to know whether something is Tomei or Tahor, something is clean or unclean, so this is not a connection. In other words, the stream of water, we say, you know, from above to below, this is not a connection. But all in Yon Yei Nesach, Havi Chimur, right? But maybe when it comes to Yei Nesach, it is a chibur. Remember, what started this whole discussion over here? They spoke about pouring from one thing into another. Is the stream that comes down a connection or not? Because if it is a connection, then in that particular case, we have to say that what's above is connected to what's below, and if what's below is not good, then what above would not be. So that's a question.
Well, vice versa.
Right. Or vice
Does
versa.
It work vice
right.
versa?
Right.
I can understand from above belonging down.
Right.
Pouring
right.
down.
Right.
But if there's something bad, how does
it go up?
How does it go up?
Okay. This is a question whether it's going to go up also because
because of the connection?
Because of the connection, right. That's what they were disputing.
Yeah.
Is it a connection or not? Right, right.
Right.
This is what they're disputing. All right. If we're electric, we would know. I mean, that there are connections, right, that goes and so on.
Water.
Right.
You can't
I have to say also that when it comes to tumor, there are various rules. It's a very complicated business. Take my word for it. Even I don't understand it completely. Okay. But there is such a thing as tumor that, for example, it goes up into the air. In other words, the airspace itself also becomes tummy because of tumor down below. So it could be that this is in line with that idea. It's possible. But anyway, this is a subject of dispute. They do not definitely decide at this particular point.
Well, because before you put before you start pouring,
right?
There's air in the connection,
right.
In the funnel or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And obviously, if it's tumor, it's tumor.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a source of tumor over here, then as I right. said, it's presumed to go up from the ground. Okay. So that being the case, you know, that this is a possibility that has something to do with over here, even though what we're talking about is pouring. And one of the Caleb has Yad Nesach. What do you do in that particular case? So we say that, therefore, what's up above is also going to be contaminated by it or not? That's the question.
This is only a connection with Yad Nesach.
Yeah. What he's trying to say is, okay, I grant you, the Mishnah says that as far as Tara and Tuma, it is not something that makes a connection.
Okay.
But maybe with Yain Nesach, it does make a connection, because for us, Yain Nesach maybe is more more severe or something like that.
Poorly,
you know? Yeah. Okay. So, all right, so now on the fourth line from the bottom. So, Amos Sefer, he says, all right, so let's look again. What does it say at the last part that we quoted? That harsh. Borin, Chibor, Letumo, Uletaro. So, Letumo, Letaro, who the heavy Chibor? Okay, so granted, okay, so I'll say, that's when it says harsh Borin, in other words, that small pool that we were talking about before, which is, you know, it joins and says that this could be a joining for chibur, for either tumah or tahara, right? But that's what, you know, the tumah or tahara, this is what is involved, he says. But only in a nesach, maybe when it comes to a nesach, why have a chibur? Maybe it's not. So he says, that being the case, we can't really come to a decision about the problem in Yad Nesach, whether it forms a connecting link or not, whether the tumah, in other words, is going to go up. Does it go down? I mean, not going down, obviously, that would be much clearer, you know, but going up. Okay.
In other words, yeah. It means it's hanging.
Right. So now they quote something else. Tanan. It says, okay, so we learned. We learned that Notar Samashpeh, he took a funnel. Alright. Who's taking a funnel? Obviously it has to be, we're talking about a Jew who's taking a funnel, right? And he has wine and he pours through the funnel into the, let's say, the jar or the pitcher that the idolater has. The chazor or modar l'sochel. And then there's a Jewish customer next door, right? Right next to him. And what does he do? He then takes the funnel and he pours it into the container that the Jew has. All right? This is the situation. So now we turn the page to Amit Beis. Right. And we continue. So he says, "Im yesh bo akeves yayin osur." If in the funnel itself there still is a little bit of the yayin nesach, right? Then in that case it is prohibited. Okay. In other words, what is prohibited? What's prohibited is what he poured into the second, into the Jews, tzolochis, because there was still a little bit of Yayin Nesach in the bottom of the funnel someplace, and that being the case, so it made even the Jewish wine that came into the Jewish tzolochis, right, the Jewish container, that made it also Yayin Nesach, and therefore it's prohibited to the Jews.
Question is,
right.
When he poured it into the goy's or the idol's flask, okay,
right, right.
Did it make the wine, the Jewish wine that he was pouring? Did he make that tomei?
Well, the minute that the goy holds it in his own container, he's taken possession of it. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it grows up, like you say, like you said in the Mishnah.
No, that's not what they're talking about at this moment. Okay. In other words, they go from one inyan to another. No. They go from one thing to another.
Now the question that I have, suppose the containers are supplied by the Jew.
Right.
He has all these empty flasks.
Yeah.
And he's got an empty flask.
Right.
That he has poured the first bottle for the joy.
Yeah.
It, the idol worshiper.
Yeah.
And then he took the same thing, the funnel,
yeah.
And he poured the second flask.
Yeah.
And the flasks were clean because they belonged, they were...
Okay.
But
I think what you're trying to say is as follows. I'm not sure. Okay.
Well,
he has two containers, okay?
Out of
he fills... Yeah. So he fills this container and he fills this container.
Right.
This one he gives to the goy, this one he gives to the Jew. None, nothing.
It's
but that's nothing, right?
That's the point. That's
yeah.
The question.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
No, it depends on whose flask it is and the funnel is.
It depends on whose flask
right,
it is.
Right,
right.
Yeah, so that makes the difference.
Yeah.
That's the point I want to do.
Yes. Right. But the very fact, you know, that when the goy has wine in it, so all he has to do is to shake it, as we learned way, way, way back.
Yeah.
That,
look,
right, automatically, right.
Before
yeah.
It has been poured into the second funnel, it already belongs to him.
Yeah, that's already another problem. Correct. Right. Right. That's a problem that we had before. Right. And we didn't really solve that problem either. But I wanted just to make the point. They knocked down the first question, whether it's a chibur. They're trying to come to a conclusion. Is it or isn't it? So they quoted the business about those things that are a chibur or are not a chibur for tumah tara, right? So they quote that. But in the end, they say, but maybe avodah zorah is a different inyan. Maybe for avodah zorah, it is. Or maybe it isn't. At any rate, they had not decided. And so they go on to a different case to see whether that case is something that they could learn from. That's what we're having over here. We're having a series of cases to see whether we could establish a principle or not.
Right.
Whether we'll come to a principle, they say, okay.
You didn't study before.
What's interesting is, you know, the intellectual play over here. How, you know, they have argument and counter-argument, you know. I want to say it's only a goyish, I mean a yiddish cup, but it helps,
well,
it helps.
Right,
right, right. Yes. All right.
All right,
so now we come to the story of the funnel, right?
Right?
All right, so he said, if there is a bit of wine in the bottom of the funnel, which of course had been poured into the goy's container, then if he pours it into the Jewish container after that, so we say it's osur, right?
Osur.
It's prohibited.
Right.
Okay. But the question is, this is, you know, the end of the first line, beginning of the second line, he says, right, b'may ko mitzura, tell me, how does it become prohibited? Lav b'nitzok, it must be because of the fact that the wine is being poured directly. Shma minos, so if that's the case, we come to the conclusion that nitzok chibur, right, that nitzok, in other words, if the water goes straight down, right, from above to below, then automatically it is a connecting link, and therefore if down below it's goyim, right, so it makes already yayin nesach for the next customer. This is what he's saying, right? So, at any rate, Rav Chiya is not happy with that. It says to me, Rav Chiya, so Rav Chiya says, no, this is the situation. He says, he says, this is when the Oved Kochovim, when the idolaters' container got so full that it pushed his wine up into the funnel. Right. Right. Yeah. So he says, Avol, but he says, what if, you know, it was not full and he stopped pouring, you understand? So my, so, do we say that it is a chibur? Tifshot in the tzok ain't a chibur. Then we would come to the conclusion that going straight down is not a connector. It's not a connection. Right, making it the Nesach, right. So it says, lo pichusatu tzlechise, right, if it did not, you know, it did not overflow, then tivshat lecho, the asur, right, then you're going to tell me, you know, that it is prohibited. So it says, nitzok tiboy. So the question still remains, what about the nitzok, you know, when it goes straight down, is it a chibur? Is it not a chibur? A connection. So if that's the case, let's go on to another example and find out if we can establish anything. Tashma. All right, listen, it says, Ham ore mikli likli. right? He pours from one vessel into another vessel. Okay? Es Shema'ora Mimenu Muta. Then the kli from which he pours is permitted, right? Because Chod Beino Beini Osir. But what is in between, in other words, once it leaves, then that becomes Tomei or Yanesach or something. I'm talking about the Yanesach and the five modalities. Okay, so in other words, the upper one is all right, but the stream itself is already, it's a question, right? Is it a chibur or not? Okay. So the argument continues. It says, also Shmami know from this we understand then that nitzok chibur, right? That what comes down straight down is a connection, right? So they say hold it, in nitzok chibur. Then if we say that it's a connection, then afila the gviya the mana namilitsa, then even the inside of whatever the vessel is, that should also be prohibited. So he says, ha le kasha. So it says it would not be a kasha, it wouldn't be a difficulty, to call maktiv ketufe, if instead of pouring in a steady stream, he simply poured a few drops, stopped. Poured a few drops, stopped. Poured a few, because then we don't have a nitzok. We don't have a steady stream going down, so there's no connection. Nikol Moko, but nevertheless, from this we have to come to the conclusion that what? Nitzok Chibar. That it goes straight down, a steady line, right? In that case, it is a connection. But Li Tameich, and if I follow your opinion, he says, Ema Seifa, then how about what followed over there in the quotation that you quoted? Eisha Yira Lesercha Yehuda Osir, Vodu Venu Venu Shari, which is quite opposite of what we said a moment ago, that, what he poured into it, this becomes prohibited, right? But what was happening in between is permitted. So guess what? Ela meho, but from this example too, Reko de mashma. You cannot really draw any conclusion, minor from it. Okay. Yes. Yes, all right. Here's a guy, all right, so Jew has something on the top, okay? Guy has something on the bottom. And the question is, if he pours directly into it, then what? Do we say that there is a chibur? Then in which particular case, it might also mean that what is on top, right? But the kli that the Jew had also becomes. But we said, no, love dafka. Maybe there's a contrary view that says that what's on top is okay, but only what's on the bottom is osir. And the question is, what comes in between? Is it a chibur or is it not a chibur? Okay? That's the question. Right. If it's exactly. So therefore, the suggestion is that if it's ketufi, in other words, you come down, drop by drop, not in the steady stream, then that would not be a connection. This is what we got it out of that. But nevertheless, to the question, how about Nitzok, when it comes to the steady stream, have we resolved that problem? He says, no, we haven't resolved that problem either.
Still have the same problem.
Physics.
Right.
So it's just left hanging.
Yeah.
So far.
No,
they have not come to a conclusion, definitely. No. Right, yes.
In terms of physics, I understood the part where
Yes.
So like a pressure building upwards.
Right. And of course, if the funnel is there, definitely it's got to go into the funnel, no question. Okay. Right.
But here, just the stream itself, from a point of view of science, as opposed to their construct, how do they reason that the Yang Netzach will go into the funnel or somehow contaminate this ebor? In other words, the stream of wine that comes from the Jewish vessel, which everybody agrees to top four,
Right.
How does that happen?
Okay, I said before, there are those who hold that view that that just to every action there's a reaction, right? Remember that one? Since we're talking physics? Okay, so that maybe there is this reaction. But, okay, well, I also mentioned that in case, of tumor, there is such a thing that we say that tumor rises from the ground. If you have something, which is tummy, source of tumor, let's say a dead body or something like that, then even the airspace above it becomes tummy.
So
that may be that there's something allied to that idea, right?
What about the funnel itself?
Yeah.
The funnel has been inserted into the jar.
Right.
That belonged to the...
To the goy.
In the first place.
Correct.
Doesn't that make that funnel chomet?
As long as the wine hasn't been poured, it hasn't.
You mean actually using your kosher funnel in an unkosher situation, just dry like that?
Right.
But if there was something left in the bottom where it
was. Well, then in that particular case, we say, right, so that is the Yai Nesach. That's right. And when he asks how could it happen, so the answer is, particularly under circumstances where the bottom one is full to overflowing, so that it backs up. Right. Right. Yeah.
You would think, with all of this discussion, that a man who is in the business would have a separate funnel for the drive and for the other separate one.
Well, it wouldn't be a bad idea. Wouldn't be a bad idea. Right.
It would have solved the whole problem.
Well, more or less.
And maybe there's an Olamad, he's barely making a living from selling the wine to whichever customer comes in. Right. I would suggest they should have sold schnapps instead of wine or beer or something.
My grandmother's father had this shank.
Oh, yeah,
the shank.
Yeah, right.
Must have been non-Jews from the area that came in.
Absolutely. There's no question. Many Jews barely make that. Right. This is a source of making a living for many Jews, right? Right. I mean, they had the concession from the local poets, they could do that. So the soccer, I mean, they sold to Jews and to the non-Jews. That's how.
The main business is wheat fields.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, there were people.
I know. I'm talking about my grandmother.
Yeah, okay.
They had wheat fields, but her father.
Yeah.
I remember telling the story about the
Shanky. Yeah, yeah. But there are many Jews, particularly in the small villages where they did it. Not talking about the big cities, but the small villages that they were. Right. All right, so we haven't solved that problem either. So, Toshma. All right, let's get another example. Hama'ore mechovis nebor. So they quote the following statement. Okay, guy has a barrel, all right, and it's a barrel of wine, okay, and he pours it into a cistern, into a pit, a holding pit, okay, because if they wanted to preserve, very often, they would make something in the ground that was able to hold water for a long time, or to hold wine in this particular case. Okay.
So it says, whatever comes, once it leaves the, literally the lip of the barrel, in other words, once it goes outside the barrel and down, is osur, is prohibited. So, Tirgamor Rav Sheshes, or Rav Sheshes, tried to, he explained that this is a particular case. He says, so he says, the case that we're talking about, where it is prohibited, is where the goy actually is holding the barrel and he pours the wine into the pit. So why is the wine in the pit also? Because it was the goy with his own koyach, with his own power, his own strength, who did the job. And we learned before that if there's the koyach of the goy, then in that particular case, that could make it also yaydes. Okay? So far, so good. All right, so this is what Shesha is explaining. So he says, so they question this too. They says, if it is an idolater who is pouring, afilu gavo de chavisa name mitzah, gavo me mitzah, right? So then even what's inside the barrel, you know, that the guy is holding is prohibited, because right, because the goy used his koyach in order to lift it, to pour it, and so on and so forth. So they say mid rabbanan, says no, but this isur is one that the rabbis imposed, but not something is in the Torah itself. The aser hahu, the nofak levrai, goes to beirvan. Because when it came to the rabbis, and they said, whatever comes out, that they say is prohibited. But ahuda the gavai, but whatever is within the barrel still stays in the barrel, lo goes with the rabbanon. The rabbanon did not say that that is prohibited. So in other words, they knocked down that theory, that, in other words, that the koyach.